Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I was going to add in some reference to Indiana Jones, but I can't remember what's going on in that world right now. There's so much going on. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I'm trying to keep Indiana Jones and Star Wars straight as well.
And I'm Jennifer Landa, and I have not seen the movie. The Indiana Jones movie, that is.
Yes.
Yes. We will say nothing.
Yes, we will keep it under wraps here. Years of improv training, but it's been decades since I've been on an improv stage. And sometimes when I'm like, let me throw in a wrinkle to this podcast intro, it's going to trip me up. I can't do that. From the center of the galaxy and from Indiana Jones' heart to you. Hey, everybody, we're here to talk some Star Wars news, some breaking news from a long time ago, including a little bit of news that we're not going to dive into, but we're acknowledged that it's happening today with the Acolyte. But before we get to all of that, we want to remind you today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You have a place to listen to it. you can get the book by going to audiblechild.com/4Center. A little bit later, we'll have our 4Center recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But Joseph, we are also asking, as we've been doing, and it's been wonderful to get the response.
That is right. We are continuing to discuss our Patreon, advertise, ask about our Patreon. A ton of people have joined us in the last couple of months. It was, we've done a bigger push, and that means we've unlocked a bunch of cool rewards, including it made it possible to do this other center experiment where Ken and I discussed all of the Indiana Jones films leading up to Dial of Destiny. Those were available on Patreon for weeks, and then we released them to the public. You all made that happen. You also made it happen that Jennifer is working on, at this point, what sounds like an entirely brand new YouTube show. Originally designed to be, let's take those audios that are so good and just, you know, put some pictures. And it sounds like Jennifer is out there in the wild, investigative reporting, random studios in Van Nuys. And that, the new YouTube show, 5 episodes of The Jedi Beat with pictures, is going to be premiering on Monday, July 17th, thanks to you. So if you are interested in becoming a part of the Patreon, that's the kind of stuff that's going to happen. There's going to be more coming soon. This is our asks segment, but I'll also throw in a thanks. Thank you all for your support and your patience as we have slowed down a little bit in our normal monstrous recording schedule. We've all been busy. We've had some focus on Indiana Jones and other life stuff. So thank you, everyone, who has been understanding. And we will be ramping back up soon for Ahsoka and whatnot. That is it.
Yeah, no, I want to echo what Joseph said. We mentioned before, but it just it's that, man, I feel shame and guilt for just taking that line. So weird to be like, so sorry we didn't do 9 hours of broadcasting this week, but we actually really do love doing that, and so we're gonna get there. Hopefully this unplanned break, which has a kind of a soft like you said, soft end with Ahsoka, gives me more time to read the comics. I went and got more of my comics, and I have a stack of Star Wars comics so big it can't fit into a bag. I have to just have it on the coffee tables. They slide, because comics slide everywhere too. So it's been a mess. Anyways.
Yeah.
Anyways. Thank you all for supporting us on patreon.com/4Center. I can't wait for Jennifer's series. Jennifer, update. Has it broken your soul yet? You're still excited? What's going on?
Yes, exactly. I live in the archives now. Just call me Jocasta New. Digging through the archives. You know, I spent, I think, like 8 hours on Saturday. I don't even know, I don't even know what I was doing. I just was looking for footage. But it's amazing how going from the Stuart Freeborn UK shoot of the Mos Eisley Cantina, right? And the creatures he designed versus Rick Baker's team. There's a lot more behind the scenes making of, there's just a lot more photos of Rick Baker and his team, which I was so thankful for. I'm like, yes, finally. So I can tell the story properly. But one thing I learned, and I did not know this, and I thought I knew all the Mos Eisley Cantina characters. This week I learned that there are 3, and correct me if I'm wrong in the pronunciation, Godel characters. They look like the goats, those guys. I think there's a female one. There's 3 of them, but they use the same mask for all 3. And then the outfits that they found were just like, you know, from other bar patrons. I mean, they really kind of slapped it together on some of these characters. And the genius thing is that when it's all said and done, you can't even tell. No. It's amazing what they pulled off. So yes, my spirit was reinvigorated after I got to the Rick Baker section. Love was it. Fun.
See,
I was going to ask you a bunch of questions, but I realized I can just wait for the answers on your show about the sequence and who made what and all that.
Right. It is pretty fascinating. And it's interesting too, to see how different people tell the story and trying to piece together what maybe is the truth, right? Everything's kind of true to a certain point of view. So I'm trying to be a little bit more objective, because some people do share some opinions that I'm not so sure about if are completely accurate. Yeah. Maybe I'll tell you guys off air.
Okay.
Did Stuart Freeborn and Rick Baker have a fight that then their moms told them not to have?
No. And obviously Stuart Freeborn and his family continued on with the Star Wars trilogy, making so many other great characters. So there is no bad blood there. Mm. But it is interesting. I mean, they're all geniuses, right? They're all wonderful at their craft.
I'm fascinated by that. I've spent a lot of time in my other life interviewing witnesses and never found one to be 100% correct. It's a weird thing. And then take that to Star Wars, where even the Han Solo I know, Empire Strikes Back thing, is told so many different ways. It's and then there's that footage, that audio footage that exists, that it was not the way history recorded it. And Carrie Fisher was very much involved in the fact that she was angry for not being involved. It's a whole wonderful thing that our intrepid reporter, Jennifer Landa, goes on the street to find out.
Yes, that was my adventure.
That's a good one.
That's a good adventure here. Joseph, your adventure mostly has to be around work, I think, and some big life things I know, but that's got to be dominating. How do you find joy in the work?
Oh, I'm finding, honestly, like my biggest Star Wars adventure is thinking about the kind of stuff that you're talking about, Jennifer. I'm working hard on this short film, and there's so many things that are really fun and I'm really proud of. And there were shots on the day that I was like, that's gold. I love it. It's perfect. There's those moments where like this thing I imagined in my head a couple months ago is now real on my computer screen as I'm editing. You know, so those moments that have just like, wow, this is cool. This is why we do it. And then there's moments that didn't turn out exactly the way you want and you're wrestling with it. And you're like, there's no way around making this compromise. You know, will anybody see? And that's the most moments where I think about Star Wars and, you know, poor George Lucas, you know, with sent home from England with stomach pains because of the stress and that not knowing if it's going to work out. And then, you know, you dig into that first Star Wars film. And it is so janky, not because people didn't care, but because it was really hard to make on a small budget. And Star Wars is living my mind that way a lot of like, well, there's some compromises you're going to have to make and you're going to have to try to be creative about, you know, figuring out the solutions. And I think that is so the genesis and in the inspiration for the inspiring part of that, ILM documentary of like, we didn't know what we weren't supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right.
So we broke rules. Cause I think, I can have that voice of like, you shouldn't do that. You know, are you an expert? Did you go to 6 years of school? Like, I don't know. I think there's a lot in our culture right now that has a lot of, I don't know, finger wagging about the way everything should be done.
Yes.
And if I had the time and the money, I would like to be an expert in everything, but I don't want it to stop me from trying things. And that was the joyful part of the weekend. And then I'll wrap up here. I've been on the films I've been working on. One of the things I've been really having fun doing and teaching myself more about in just experimenting is the kind of Ben Burt Foley of like, what I need these noises and I'm alone in my apartment with a Zoom. What can I do? So I spent Saturday morning punching a lemon.
Wow.
And it was a lot of fun and I got some really horrible sounds that'll go nicely in my horror movie. So in some ways that was my Star Wars adventure.
That's beautiful. That's good. I think I know the scenes you're working on then. Amazing.
Yeah.
I love hearing all that I had this thought too. I don't even know if we talked about it off air, but watching and being part of your shoot there for this last short film, watching you direct it was a fun experience, but it really was not lost on me that, you know, you hired this crew, you met with the DP, but you didn't know him and you never worked with him. And you basically showed up there the first day as they did. And we're like, cool, can we figure this out together? And wow. I thought many, many times, and I thought it, you know, ended up working wonderfully, but I thought many times of like, poor Georgie Lucas on the set with Gil Taylor just saying, shut up, son, I'll shoot it for you. You know?
Yeah.
I thought about that a lot, about why. Yeah. George did go home with chest pains and stress.
Yeah. And also I think there is this, I'm not saying that this short film that I'm working on is visionary in the next Star Wars, but for me, I want stories that are like, this is a weird vision and maybe it will work. Maybe it won't make sense to people. Maybe some people won't like it, but I want it to come from like, I'm not just trying to do here are the seven shots and we do them. Mm-hmm. Like, I sometimes want to do things that, like, why would you do that? And like, I had some great moments with our wonderful cinematographer where he absolutely worked with me, but there was that instinct, like, I'm going to shoot it like this, 'cause it looks great. And like, yeah, it does. But I want this weird thing instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that really made me, and that all worked out. It was great. Mm-hmm. But that really made me think of George Lucas, of like, I've got this really weird vision in my head. This isn't just, let's pump out one of them science fiction films. Like, mm-hmm. I need specific things, and this guy won't talk to me.
Gil Taylor is quiet, son. Yeah, it actually kind of flows into one of the things I had experienced this last week in my Star Wars and life adventures, researching. I feel like I've had both of your adventures, not to the degree that you've experienced them. But researching a little bit for this project I've been working on at this other company I'm at, and it's all around young Indiana Jones, and had put the it's an essay type thing. I finished it. The draft was getting ready to go away, and then I just stopped. And Jen, you probably know this just from what you've been doing. Suddenly, a Google search turned up something that it had not previously turned up. Like, suddenly, mm-hmm. now I had there's an article for the Washington Post on March 4th, 1992, the day Indiana Jones, the young Indiana Jones Chronicles debuts. And that's one of those press, hey, we got a show tonight. You going to watch it interviews? You know, this is we're all used to these. And in this interview, it ends with George Lucas kind of going through, I was done writing action adventure. There's something else I'm trying to do with this series. He thinks this series is, quote, more of his people film, like American Graffiti. The show had not even debuted on ABC. It was debuting that night. And the article ends with this quote. It says, if this can find an audience, it'll be wonderful. But I'm not going to do something that upsets the integrity of the work in order to make it be a success. And I just absolutely love that energy of George. Joseph, you referred to him as the rebel in flannel, and I just absolutely love that. And how that we know this is 1992, and we know where this all leads. We this goes to the prequels and him doing it his way, for better or worse. And then some beats might be worse, and some beats I think are the best. And it's truly from him. And I found that inspiring, and just some of the other things I do. I'm not making ABC television shows or you know, giant IP space saga franchise films, but where I'm like, I'm doing it this way. I'm going to try it this way because this is the way I want to do it. And I feel good about that. And if it finds an audience, great. If not, I can't control it because this is my art. This is what I want to do. And it's just, it's an amazing interview. It's stubborn George in 1992 going, yeah, we're about to launch this wonderful series. You're probably all going to hate it, but that's okay.
right.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And like, I understand, you know, there are market forces and mm-hmm. there's this stated desire sometimes from like Lucas and Spielberg talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark of like, we want to make a movie that's really, really fun for an audience. I'm not saying you should just go like, I do not care about the audience.
Right.
But I just find it so compelling that when people are say, I don't know if this will find an audience. I hope so. I want it to. I think I love it. And I think other people should, but I got to stay true to it. And you know, I won't get into it in a long way, but I was reading some of the box office reports about Dial of Destiny. And one of them had just like a bunch of conjecture about they would have made money if they did X, Y, and Z. And it was all about just sort of like plug and play choices for marketability. Mm-hmm. And that's not art to me. Mm-hmm. It's got to come from the soul. And I love that Lucas is like, yeah, this is the story I want to tell, and I'm telling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the worst criticisms of the Phantom Menace and done in video form that we all know of is the structure of Phantom Menace, how it doesn't follow X, Y, and Z. And it's like, great. So you've discovered the point. Why don't you get it? So, yeah.
It's easy to sit back, right, and critique other people's work. It's hard to do the work. And to not only then go through the process of doing the work, but then to be vulnerable and put yourself out there in that way, and to be okay with it not resonating with people. But that is what separates an artist at home, which I, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it. Oh, what if people don't? No, because otherwise you might be spending 20 years of your life sitting at home not doing anything, mm-hmm. right? Wishing you had done it, then at least trying and learning from the quote-unquote failures of it, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a tough thing being an artist. It is really not an easy thing to do, but it's a wonderful, wonderful profession.
Yeah.
Rewarding.
Lucky.
Yeah. Yes. Very lucky. Very lucky.
No, wonderful. Yeah. Got a lot of deep thoughts this weekend. And there's a lot of, I want to spend that one day after the conversation about the modern Star Wars era, which I think George does rub up against at times because of what he feels it's not doing. And I still think it's under a different standard. It is under the standard of we've engaged with this for all of our lives. What does it mean to us now? And how do we look back, but apply it to now? I think that's all through those movies. But I also would have loved seeing, midichlorians make a comeback and George go into a micro world or whatever he said. And then it would not have been a success. It would have made money.
Yeah.
We would.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was part of my thing. I did get to see Dial of Destiny a second time. I could probably go on a long rant about people, sitting in lobbies, spoiling the movies for the people waiting to get in. I'll save that for another time. I mean, check out my podcast, The Blathering. I might use some words not made for a Sunday morning describing my experience seeing the movie at a theater last night. But had a lot of fun. And we should say, Joseph, our Dial of Destiny deep dive discussion is on the way. We will, you might have heard it by the time you listen to this episode. I can't remember what we're going
to I think we're going to record it after this one, but release it before. So I hope everybody enjoyed the thing we haven't recorded yet.
There you go. Well, let's get into the news here. We got some stuff to get into. I set up top a little bit of breaking news as we're going to record here with some names being attached to the Acolyte as directors, some writers maybe emerging. And we'll dive into that one, not just when it becomes more official. I think some of the sources are pretty official because it's like one of the director's LinkedIn page. So, they put it there. It's real. But we're still kind of gathering all the facts, but fun to get some more information about the fine folks making The Acolyte beyond just Leslie Headland, a good team around her. And I'm excited for that. But we just want to acknowledge that news broke, but get into the stories we're going to discover cover today and discover Kathleen Kennedy on the possible connections between the Dawn of the Jedi, the New Jedi Order films, and a little thing about, hey, moving beyond George, which, let's dive into it here. Well, while out on the Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny promotional train, Kathleen Kennedy made some comments about the new Star Wars films that generated some headlines. Hey, shocker. Let's dive in. So there's this first one here, and I actually was going to go the other direction with discovering it or covering it. Let's go this way here. This is the connections between the films of Sharmeen Obaid-Chinoy and James Mangold, as I call him, Big Jim. First, Kathleen said that the idea of going back to the so-called Dawn of the Jedi was an idea or concept that had been on the table for a long time. So what I'm saying by that is not necessarily Mangold's idea in general, but of course, she said, that's come up a lot from the moment I stepped in and George brought me into the company. There's been a lot of interest in that. I thought that was interesting because that's going back to like 2010, 2011 range. And I don't know, just kind of makes a lot of sense. Right, Jen?
Yes. I thought that this was a very smart way of kind of taking the reins back. So as we've seen in the past, Lucasfilm has parted ways with several directors after their projects have been announced. So for me, I think that she's making it clear that this Dawn of the Jedi era, whatever idea, is a Lucasfilm idea, not just a James Mangold's idea. Because in interviews, I feel like he, or maybe it's the way that they're reporting it, have been making it saying, oh, this is James Mangold. He's the one that had this idea for the Dawn of the Jedi, blah, 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 blah. So that if for some reason he was no longer attached to the film, then people would be freaking out, right? The headlines would be spinning. How could they do this? This was his idea, right? No, she's saying this is our idea. We've been wanting to tell this story. He's just somebody who it sparked an interest in him as well. I thought that, I don't know, maybe I'm reading into it, but that's what I thought.
No, I could follow that that thread out a bit there too. I mean, he's what I like about him is he's someone who's got a lot of ownership about what he's going to work on, right? It invigorates him. He's excited about it, even if it doesn't get made. We're hearing a lot about what might have been, but we're just hearing hints of what could have been for a R-rated Boba Fett movie as he finally admits it. That. By the way, I remember the stories of him saying, I'm absolutely not involved with a Boba Fett movie. Why are you asking me that? I remember those tweets. I remember those comments, but he says now for understandable reasons, says now, yeah, no, it was going to be something different. I think it was scaring everybody. So I like that about him. That's what I like about him. He takes it on. But yeah, I think it's interesting. And some of it's in his comments of like, I want a distance from the story. And then they're like, what about this? 25,000 years. It's like, crap, that's distance. I like it. all kind of speaking up there. But it also makes a lot of sense, Joseph, for, you know, George sitting at a big table going, hey, welcome aboard, Kathleen. Hey, here's some things we could get to. I don't know. I like about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really tracks. That's where my mind went, that, you know, Kathleen Kennedy talking about when she's coming to the company, what is George interested mm-hmm. in? And I think he always seems like he was spitballing about different directions to take Star Wars. Hmm. And I think it tracks with his interest, probably particularly in that time of other eras mm-hmm. of Star Wars, you know, to spend time in. Mm. The man loves prequels. I love that quote from Dave Filoni when I can't remember what interview or where, but people are talking about how the kind of confusing nature of the Clone Wars in broadcast order, as sort of one episode would suddenly jump back in time and be a setup for an episode two seasons earlier in those first couple seasons. And I think Filoni, trying to be like very political, just said, you know, George just really likes prequels. Always has made me laugh, because I think it is that he gets interested in, like, I think a part of storytelling is always like, where do you jump into the story? How do you got to start the most active pages? Kurt Vonnegut has this great, you know, how to write a novel. Well, start writing it and then cut the first 10 pages off. Mm-hmm. And Lucas is somebody who's always like, oh, takes that advice and starts in the heart of the story and then goes, actually, I'm really interested in those first 10 pages. Let's go back and tell that story. Mm-hmm. So the idea of him going all the way back to sort of the first 10 pages of the entire concept mm-hmm. of Star Wars makes a ton of sense to me. And he's had those, you know, quotes about maybe his sequel trilogy was going to be about Darth Maul, but also maybe it was going to be about going into the world of the midichlorians.
Yeah.
You know, and then a final thing for me on just sort of the Lucas perspective on it is he has he certainly had no allegiance to the canonical nature of the expanded universe. But he was often inspired by, like, ooh, I like that character, so I'll mm-hmm. take that character and do whatever the hell I want with that. Or I like that idea, or I like that era. And I know that I'm not super familiar with it, but a lot of the EU legend stuff is going farther back in time. So the idea mm-hmm. that him would go like, ooh, I like that. I want to play with that. So all that stuff really tracks for me that there'd be an interest from Lucas and Lucasfilm in that era. And then I really like what you're saying, Jennifer, of the savvy move to say, Lucasfilm is crafting this era called Dawn of the Jedi. Mangold came in with a pitch of exactly how to tell a sliver of that era's story. Mm-hmm. And we said, hey, that's great. Lucasfilm has the reins. We're crafting the era. You have a story that takes place in that era that might be kind of pivotal and important to that era. Great. Mm-hmm. Perfect marriage of era and individual concept. Let's go.
Mm. Yep. There it is. Yep.
Yeah. Not like Leslie Headland coming in with an idea of Acolyte and them going, well, hey, we got this thing called the High Republic, and her going, love it. Let's run with it. Let's
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stunning stuff there. So while Mangold is going into the past, Obed Chinoy is taking reign of the future, as we know, but both share a connective thread. And here is where it really starts to get interesting, at least out there in the punditry world. On that Kathleen said, it was something that Jim immediately sparked to, and I think it's a real nice compliment to what we're doing with moving into the future with Rey, and then understanding a bit more of where this all came from, because it will be at the heart of creating the new Jedi Order. So to get a real sense of where that might have began with the Dawn of the Jedi could be pretty cool. So, full stop. Trying to be as nice but honest as possible. I think this has already been translated on some big pop culture shows, other podcasts, and online. Not in a discourse with a capital D way yet, but I just think where it's being discussed, I've seen a lot. That this is taken to mean a direct connection between the two films, as if Rey's going to grab an old Jedi book in one film and it would be have been written or featured the name of a character from Mangold's film, right? And we're going to dive into that because I'm, number one, not opposed to that and don't think that that's impossible to expect or think or dream about. I just want to start here with this. That's I don't believe that's what she means. Now, I'll also say this before we dive into it here. I also remember thinking Uncle Bob Iger is not, he doesn't really mean we're going to discover Han Solo's last name or how he got his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it, you know, turned into that. So I understand this discussion. I want to be clear about that. This is not a, you know, Force Center tells you to shut up. there's a lot of fun things to discuss with this idea. I just see this quote, including the could be pretty cool. Just kind of says like, yeah, we're exploring some thematic things and we might learn, you know, you might learn some things about the Force that matter with what Rey is wrestling with in the future. Even though Mangold's film would come out after, but it spiritually connects. And I'm excited about that. But anyways, caveat a little bit here as we discuss it here. Jen, I'll let you start here. Before the grumpy old Indiana Jones guys come yelling in.
I don't think that there's going to be much of an overlap. Maybe we could get a reference from Rey, like Obi-Wan in A New Hope, like mentioning the Clone Wars, right? Mm. Maybe it's just like an event that we see unfold in James Mangold's film. But more than likely, I think it's just dealing with similar themes. I think that's maybe the connection. I feel like if we go in with specific expectations, we're going to either be disappointed or angry. Mm-hmm. I just think that believing that all these things are super, super connected. Yeah, they're connected, but it's not like a play-by-play thing where, you know what I mean? Like connecting those types of dots. I just think we just have to be a little bit more loose with our interpretation of this.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Or on your guys' notes, it says interrupt. Mine says interpret because I've corrected it before.
How do we interrupt this?
Exactly. How do we stop this now? Because I feel like the train is leaving the station and we're like, no, not again, please.
Yeah. 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 No, there's a little bit of that. And there's a lot of questions, Joseph, including the how do we interpret this? Is it possible? We want that to some degree or a full connection. And I want to get into some of that fun. But I also think there's just an absolute danger in accepting this at a complete face value, that this becomes talking points, that this becomes, see, finally, they've got a plan. I've seen some of those articles. So they get a chance to do it right, which I don't think is wrong, right? I don't think it's wrong to be like, hey, this is kind of what they've said. Hey, we got through this. We did this. We did 7, 8, 9, these other movies, standalones didn't work the way we thought. And we're taking a pause and figuring out what we want to do. I do think that's what happened. I just don't think Filoni, Obed Chinoy, and Mangold are in a room with Kathleen Kennedy and a whiteboard going, what are you going to take? What are you going to say? What am I going to say? That's not how this works, especially if you listen to the interviews from Jim Mangold. This is a guy who's like, nah, I got a handle on what I want to do. And I like that. I'm excited by that. There's also a danger, I think, a little bit in a fun high wire act way with Star Wars. Like, you know, I think other directors have had some ideas and maybe they don't necessarily work the big picture. But anyways, Joseph, interrupt me to interpret that.
Let me interpret. Mm-hmm. I really agree. To me, in this quote, the key word is compliment. The first thing she says is it was something that Jim immediately sparked to, and I think it's a really nice compliment to what we're doing moving into the future with Rey. So I don't interpret this as any sort of major plot character connectivity of, you know, we're going to learn about a MacGuffin in the New Jedi Order, and then we're going to go back to that MacGuffin at its origin in the Dawn of the Jedi. I don't think it's talking about that sort of super direct connection. I think compliment means, yeah, these things go together in an interesting way. I think the sequel trilogy of Star Wars complements Twin Peaks The Return, but I don't think they're connected plot-wise or in the same universe. I think that to me is the most important word. And what I really take from it is we are, you know, Lucasfilm is planning its phase two, charting a new future in the era of movie making and entertainment in general we're in. It's not the same days where you can just announce a trilogy and be committed to it. Mm-hmm. So you have to start with eras, with films, and see where they go. And I think what is compelling about these two films is that they have the potential to be entirely their own thing, but they do have this thematic connectivity. In particular, if the Dawn of the Jedi era or story reckons with people's decision to use the Force at all. It's not necessarily, maybe it's an origin story for the Jedi, but it seems like everything that Mangold has said, comparing it to the Ten Commandments, is this idea of there is this power and we should use it. And people in the argument are going to be making, people in the film are going to be making arguments about how do we use it. That's extremely relevant to Rey. Kathleen Kennedy has mentioned the importance of Rey having those ancient Jedi texts and in studying them. So if she's really looking back, like she's absorbed everything she learned from Luke in the sequel trilogy, like the Jedi have made a lot of missteps. But she's gone through this journey where she sees the importance and the responsibility of the power. And when it's something dark rises, a Jedi needs to be there to meet it, to help people. But now she's proactively starting this order, just like it was started all those years ago. And if she's starting from the point of the Jedi should exist, people need help, but the Force is not just a superpower. Of course, she's going to examine what rationale, what philosophy, what perspectives can best guide us to wield this power, and how did they do it at the very beginning? Those sort of thematic ideas, I think, is what Kathleen Kennedy is talking about.
Yeah, especially when you look at the prequels and George's message of, you know, hey, you've moved away from your original intentions, and maybe that leads to your downfall, and you're trying to build something again. You know, you hung out with Luke, and Force Ghost Luke, who's got some thoughts on that era as well. You're going to try to build back. Yeah. And what you're saying, that these kind of big, giant thematic connections, I think compliment's a great word to focus on. It's exciting stuff there. But we, without a doubt, I get it, because it's fun as well. We know some fine folks that, you know, explain a lot of things in Star Wars. And I want to, always say how much I enjoy that stuff too, but I do think the Easter eggs treated as some sort of currency knowledge leads to a lot of this stuff of instead of going to engage with the big ideas about what do you do with this thing that might not even have a name of the Force. You have a quote, Joseph, we can bring in here in a bit that Mangold has out there from the Happy Set Confused podcast about we might not even use those words. And that's a headline of it won't even use Jedi or the Force. Then you dig in and it's actually makes a lot of sense. And it's pretty intriguing. But anyways, I that's where I get a little, my grumpiness comes out is just because you can point at a screen and say that thing there, it's from this, it's issue 22, does not mean you're engaged with the art and the message. And I think you've potentially some really interesting messages in these films. And I think I'm just holding on to the hope that gets engaged with first versus, did you see that? Jedi Prime wrote that pamphlet and Rey has it. what does that mean? And what does that mean to you, Jen, is the question I always want to ask.
Yeah, because then we get into like AI territory where I think the movie industry wants to head, which is like, I can come up with an idea and I can make these characters live out my story idea in the movie. Quite frankly, I don't want to be doing that. Part of the fun is seeing what these writers, what these directors, creators, actors are bringing. They're bringing their own unique perspectives and experiences, and they're giving us this art. And that to me is unexpected. I want to go in being like, oh, I don't want to go in with a checklist of, okay, they said this. Okay, great. Okay, that connects with that. That's like boring, right? It's not thrilling, like where it's just like a small, subtle moment where you're like, oh, that connects with the thing that happened with Rey. Wow, right? That's much more exciting, at least for me. I don't know. Maybe some people like a checklist.
And here's the thing, and I do want to talk about it. I do think like you do have a chance to, I don't know, I call it like the Exegol of it all, where, you know, Exegol is this planet I love. I love the design. So I'm always going to be on the side of it there. But, you know, when it first popped up, you're like, okay, how does that factor into the story we already know, right? Timeline.
Right.
And Moriband and Korriband and all that, you know, and so I understand sometimes that might trip some folks up. Like I, for one, would have loved to know Starkiller Base. We had the theories on it, but that Starkiller Base was Ilum in Force Awakens. That would have been interesting, but I also don't know what that could have added to it. You know, it's just a. So my point being, yeah, all right, maybe there is some kind of like, you know, synergy in some of the information, but it's still not the story. So that's where I go with that first, Joseph.
Yeah, I think there are those small details that can make something rich if you're deeper in the world than just like, hey, it's a Star Wars. I like Star Wars. I'll go see it. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be swept up in an adventure. But I think like the thing like the Starkiller Base, like if they had said Ilum that in Force Awakens, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
But the depth of that, the power of that is being more deeply invested in the entire story of Star Wars and realizing how deep, what a deep defiling of Ilum that is, and how it launches your imagination into what does this mean for the connection between the Empire and the First Order, and how does that even work with the Kyber crystals at the heart of it? And now, anyway, the Han didn't necessarily believe in the Jedi, and now he's commemorated by a star that was created out of the heart of this holy place. All those ideas are really interesting, but they're sort of jumping off points from what is actually in the film. And I think that's the kind of connection that I would be excited by. I think I do think it's possible that there's a real surface level connection of Rey's going to be looking at those books. Mangold might have he's been talking about 10 commandments. He might have some tablet. We'll throw the tablet in there. And that's cool. That's connective. It fires your imagination.
Yeah.
But it doesn't tie either creative team's hands about the story they're telling. And this, as you're saying, Ken, the story is the point. And those little connections that we can point out sometimes are just fun surface level things or, you know, a tip of the hat to something else. And sometimes to me, the value of them is they're not the point of the story, but they fire our imagination in a beautiful way that Star Wars does for future storytelling.
Yeah.
We could get a great future novel, you know, the horror of Ilum, you know, that tells that story in a rich way and moves it from an Easter egg into its own story. And that's the kind of connection I'm imagining of like, yep, maybe one of those ancient Jedi texts that Rey has is, it, you know, I think right now they've got a bunch of names that Pablo Hidalgo gave them in the Last Jedi Visual Dictionary, but maybe it will have some resonance, but it's not the point.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and look, even some of Mangold's comments recently of you know, hey, not being tied to the saga and all those kind of things, there's some tone in what he's saying that I don't fully agree with. That I don't think it's the prison that you might think it is, Jim. Like, you know, like hang out with Pablo for an afternoon, but like that changed my thoughts on. Well, you got to think Octo or Jedi, you know, Prime Jedi would show up, but I don't necessarily think that's the case anymore. If ever was going to be the case, if he's going before it all, kind of before the labels get slapped on all these things, you know, Prime Jedi, you know, AKA Doug McAlien guy could be there. But I don't think he's interested in necessarily, you know, writing back to that. And I wouldn't want him to be at this point. So.
Yeah, I mean, they describe Octo as the first Jedi temple. And yeah, it was I think it's the happy, sad, fun. I can't remember which emotions in which order.
Happy, sad, confused.
Yeah,
happy, sad, confused. Hey, that's me. podcast. Yeah, Mangold was talking about, I think there is Dawn of the Jedi is the era. And it sounds like his film might be dealing with origins of the Jedi, but just kind of a sliver of it, the very beginnings. And I think his quote is sort of about like, you might not hear the name Jedi, which doesn't mean there won't be Jedi. I think his point is you could make an origin story about the Beatles before they have the name and before they're fully formed. And it could be a really interesting story, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that to me gives it like his film could be 200 years before they're like, and we need a temple.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's part of the fun about having James Mangold is that he's going to bring all sorts of new ideas and he doesn't have to worry so much about those connective tissues. Whereas somebody like Dave Filoni, I feel like he gets inspired. How can this, because he knows so much, right, about the canon and the characters. How can this connect with that? How can this event connect? Like, so I feel like he kind of thrives in that framework, whereas we're going to have directors who would prefer not to have that kind of like rigidity. So it's a way for us to be able to experience all different types of creators and stories.
I love that. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. And I love actually that you mentioned Filoni film because it's not really mentioned in these comments because I do think it's its own thing in a way, like, because it's obviously coming out of what's being set up in TV shows. But and yeah, Dave has that knowledge. And the thing that I always love about him is it's that Disney Gallery speech. That's just the toppings on the cake, and mm-hmm. and the story is gold to him as well. And I think that's why all that works. But exciting times, exciting things. But there's more. And talking about these new films, particularly the new Jedi Order film, Kathleen talked about the ability to bring in new characters and stories, fresh ideas, saying. And I think it offers just tremendous opportunity to introduce new characters and start with something fresh, because we culminated with what George was creating. And now we take all of that and move it to the next chapter. So, of course, that got spun off in some wonderful headlines. Disney is done with Star Wars, or George Lucas' Star Wars. It's finished. Kathleen Kennedy disrespects George. Love those headlines when searching for the news stories this week at Solo. Nope, that's not right. But what do we take from this quote, Joseph? And what's exciting about some fresh slates in 2025 and beyond? And, will George come back and tell his midichlorian origin story?
Yeah, well, I hope so. Even just in an interview, I think that'd be great. If somebody can find him at Sabaros. Don't harass George Lucas in Sabaros. I don't mean that. But anyway, I think that this is great. I think it is. In some ways, this is just to me like it is saying something that seems apparent and true. And Jennifer, as you were saying, just really taking the reins and saying almost like they don't have things. Lucasfilm doesn't have things labeled like, you know, the MCU eventually did with their phases, which is kind of a way for everybody to kind of have a handle on the shape of this story and the shape of the MCU's evolution. But I think the same thing is happening with Lucasfilm. Of the first phase was tell the sequel trilogy and experiment with exploding Star Wars out. We've now had, you know, over a decade of jokes about every Star Wars character is going to get a film. And, you know, mm-hmm, I've been a part of those jokes of like Gonk Droid, the movie is coming. Mm-hmm. But go back to 2012. If you're a little bit older like us and you lived during various wilderness times, and Star Wars is this massive, expansive galaxy where you could tell any story, but we have so few of them. Mm-hmm. And the excitement was, let's spread out and tell some of those stories. So they had the sequel trilogy. They experimented with, you know, Rogue One and Solo. We're used to them now, but that to me, they're still shocking that those exist, that those could exist.
Right.
Then there's a lot of turmoil in the industry. To read an article, it's just Star Wars is disconnected from any other reality, and Solo didn't make enough money at the box office, so everything was stopped. Like, yes, that is a factor, but also, you know, streaming, right. COVID. And completing the sequel trilogy. And I love that Kathleen Kennedy is just basically saying the first mission was to complete the sequel trilogy, put our feelers out about expanding this galaxy. We've done that with a couple of anthology films. We've done that with everything that's happening on Disney Plus. And now we're really moving into phase two, or arguably phase three, which is we're going back to the big, epic, high stakes, big screen adventures. What are they, and how can we really truly make them our own? Because George loves tradition, but he also is restless for the fresh and the new. And this is this isn't an insult to George. This is a celebration of like, heard you, George. No more X-Wings in new eras. You know, we don't want George Lucas to sit down and see these films and go, I've seen that before. We want to push into the new the way George Lucas would and did.
Yeah. Though I'm assuming Poe's going to have like the T-85 X-Wing, right? That's
probably, true. Now that I said that, yeah, probably actually will be an X-Wing, but that spirit.
No, yes, the spirit of it. 100%.
Finding the right balance between the new and the old, and not having that Force Awakens criticism that there's too much clinging to the old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even though I thought it was wrestling with it in a different way, as I think you would agree. And
I do.
Years. Jed Lott here. Look, we love George. We love him at Sabaros. We also get what Kathleen's saying here. What do you take from this?
People have argued over what George would have done with 789, what he would have wanted, what we read years ago in the EU, right? And I feel like there's just been so much negativity around the sequel trilogy, although we here at Force Center, we love it, right? But there's just been a lot of negative discourse. It kind of feels like this like comical group of fans fighting together. The dust is coming off and Kathleen Kennedy is coming out going, hey, everyone stop. We're going to start fresh. There's going to be new characters. We are going to, you know, we love George, but we're going to continue on from that. And I think it's a great way to get us fans to stop arguing amongst each other. And it's also a way to get new people on board because guess what? We got to have the youngsters. They got to like Star Wars because if they don't, Star Wars will die off with, sad to say, with us, right? They have to get new, fresh, young fans. And the way to do that is to be like, hey, you don't have to know anything about the EU or what came before, or really, you can dive into these stories without knowing all these characters. And that's exciting because I think we all forget Star Wars can be really intimidating for non-fans. And they're like, well, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the original trilogy. I haven't read that book, right? So this is something new. And I hate to say it, but George Lucas, he's not coming back. We got to move forward. The franchise has to move forward. And I say that as a true lover of George, not in that way. I love George. I love what he built. But I'm also excited to see how that can inspire new creators.
Yeah,
I totally agree. What the world needs is 9-inch nubs, more of the new for the kids.
We're going to go get nubs today at Target. He's there.
Love it.
Yes.
Say Nubs movie confirmed by Jennifer Landa.
Green light picture.
Yeah. No. I love what you're both saying here. It just makes a lot of sense. And that there was, of course, in 2012, but 2015, there, you know, episode 7 was a foregone conclusion. That was the way to do it. If they didn't do it, if they were like, we got the Star Wars thing going, but it's going to be all new characters. There would have been a lot of us going, why? So damned if you do, damned if you don't. And this just makes all of it makes a lot of sense. And again, clickbaiter's going to clickbait. I get it. It sounds real nice and sexy to say Kathleen Kennedy says we're done with George. That's absolutely not the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a headline. I think that's real. Mm-hmm. That's real disingenuous. And also, like you're saying, of like, I imagine some people running those headlines are also the ones who say Lucasfilm is dead. They have no new ideas. Here's some new ideas. Why do they hate George?
Right.
It's a vicious circle. Yeah. And to Jen's point, we move forward, but we take what he put into those stories, which, by the way, are some pretty direct. I say basic themes because they're basic themes for good lives. Compassion, empathy, fighting for the light side. That will never go away because that is the modern myth that Star Wars and so many other wonderful movies are. So there you go. That could have been one entire news show, but we wanted to spend some time with that. And I don't even know if getting ahead of it is even works anymore. I don't know, but just kind of address it there. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we got some Skeleton Crew news emerging, which is fun. Before that, we have a Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what's on the docket today?
I think I should try out the book that I've now owned for half a year, Path of Deceit by Tessa Grattan and Justina Ireland, the beginning of phase 2 of the High Republic, which is now wrapping up. We're a little behind. If you'd like to catch up with your ears, check this book out.
Check it out indeed. Download your free audiobook today. Help out the show in the process by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. Other side, let's look at Skeleton Crew here on Force.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back to Force Center, taking a look at some breaking news from a long time ago in a galaxy in Van Nuys near the airport. Have you gone there yet, Jen? Have you taken the photos? Are you out in the parking lot just snapping photos of that old ILM warehouse?
Not yet. I'm going to get my B-roll later this week. I'm excited.
Yeah. So you're having an exciting Star Wars week.
Yes, Nubs, Van Nuys. Yes.
Everything that Star Wars has to offer.
Yes. I said before, I used to play golf at the Van Nuys golf course right there and did not realize from one of the executives, the nine hole, you could see it. You could see where Island was. I didn't know it. I just knew it was somewhere as nearby. I would, you know, the things, regrets we have in life, you know. Going. Anyways, let's look ahead to Skeleton Crew. Some Skeleton Crew news. Kinda. It's one of those things. While appearing on Entertainment Weekly Star Wars podcast, Dagobah Dispatch. And by appearing, I mean, the podcast has some hosts and they do some stuff in studio. Totally don't want to sound like I'm slighting the podcast, but a lot of their interviews are just press footage, press day footage and press line interviews. You know, they cut them into the show. So you can go watch a little video clip if you want, if you don't want to listen to the entire podcast, but hey, listen to the Star Wars podcast there. Jude Law and Skeleton Crew co-creator and writer Chris Ford talked about the upcoming series. The truth behind Jude Law's character has yet to be revealed, but that's part of the thematic point, says Law, saying, "I can't tell you very much about my character. He is someone the children meet on their attempt to get home. He is like a lot of the world that they experience, contradictory, and at times a place of nurture and other times a place of threat." I really like that. I really love that description. I think it's similar to some of the things we've either discussed or heard before. Of course, Joseph and I did see, we were part of the people that saw the Skeleton Crew footage at Celebration, which was, I just thought, wonderful for a series I have like almost no expectations for, because I didn't really understand what, know or get what they were doing. And I got it. I love the footage. And I like what he said about this here. So, Jen, any thoughts on this coy but insightful answer?
I thought he handled this very, very well. You can tell he has a lot of experience in press junkets because he did give us a little bit. And there seems to be a very clear reason why they're not revealing much about his character. And so either we're going to meet his character in Ahsoka, maybe we'll mention his character in Ahsoka, or maybe that they're hoping that this air of mystery will make people want to watch the series. I mean, it's Jude Law. And I think that he is really great at playing charming characters that can also be dangerous or unpredictable. I think that that's a great strength of his as an actor. And I don't think he's a Jedi. Maybe he's force sensitive. Maybe he's a hustler like Kumail Nanjiani's character in Kenobi. Who knows? The possibilities are endless, but I can't wait for this show.
Love that. And I love Jude Law's mustache. Just looking solid with that push broom there. Just thoughts on this here. A lot of themes running through this answer.
Yeah, I think what's appealing to me about the show that they've been pretty consistent about, it's there in the trailer, is it isn't just like this fun cutesy show. It's about the real heart of adventure, particularly coming of age stories, that there are a lot of joys and wonders to discover out in the bigger galaxy, out in the bigger world. But to get to the joy and the fun and the feeling of resilience because you have survived something, that means you're also going to encounter terror. And you got to push past fear. And I love that part of the coming of age story, that part of Star Wars that, you know, Luke wants to go out in the world and Luke's sure he can be a Jedi. And you got, you know, Yoda suddenly just being scary as hell. You know, you're not afraid, you will be. And I feel like that's at the heart of it. This is a fun adventure show about the relationship between wonder and terror. They're both out there and they're both part of being an adult. So I feel like everything that he's saying is, my character is capturing that. He talks about later in the interview that there's, you know, a lot of scenes with the kids, and some of them he's like, some of them are goofy and some of them are very threatening. So I like all this extremes. Here's my wild prediction. You know who else is goofy and threatening toward children? Hondo. I think he's Hondo in a human suit.
Oh,
that's great. So, like Men in Black, Edgar, your skin's falling off your bones. Okay, that's great.
Wow. Not an actual quote, but a vibe. Like that gathering arc of Clone Wars is one of my favorites and messed up. I mean, kidnapping people and then, but he's got a warm heart and he's like, all right, I'll help you instead of terrorize you. Jennifer, have you seen the trailer or heard leaks?
I have seen nothing. Okay, seen a skeleton crew title, that a graphic. That's all I've seen.
Right. I wish they'd make that trailer public since it's available, because I feel like there's stuff like the article mentions stuff from the trailer, but again, we didn't get a chance to talk off air whether we're going to talk about stuff that's in the trailer.
Yeah. I still love to keep that kind of stuff exclusive, but it's not a frustration point, but there is a conversation to have, and maybe we can have it here now I know Ahsoka's next in the hopper. I know that's the promotional train, and I know sometimes you got a pinpoint, this is when we got to talk about it and let people know it's coming. But I just think there'd be more buzz for this series if that was released. And it's great.
I think so too.
Throw some stuff in. Yeah, no.
Shoot, now I want to see it. Maybe I could probably find like a leaked copy online, which, you know, it's not quite the same thing, obviously.
They'll release it soon. And the reason I mentioned it is because you're already on top of the thing. There's really only one thing in it that's like, that alters the conversation in a fun way or gives more definition to the fun speculation. And I feel a little restrained because I don't want to. Probably most people know, but I just don't want to.
Most people know.
Okay, Jen, you've been busy. It's all right.
God, well, I mean,
can you say it?
Well, that's what I'm wrestling with. And I know it's absurd because probably everybody's like, yeah, we didn't see it, but we read the description. We all know. Yeah.
Oh.
I'm just for those three people who didn't, I don't.
Yeah.
You know. Should we put a spoiler warning for like, what, 10 seconds?
Sure.
That's fair.
Okay.
Ooga.
Ooga, ooga, 10 second. And maybe, Jennifer, you know this because you're talking about it. The pop at the end of the trailer is the Jude Law character levitating something.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So you probably knew about that, and probably everybody's listening is like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, right.
So it does rate. So that's the big question. Once that trailer is released to everybody, the big question is, you know, is he a trickster like you're saying, like Haja was?
Right.
But if not, is he a Jedi who hid from the Empire? Mm. Is he someone who, you know, was expelled or ran away from the Order? Like I think with that trailer, they're clearly trying to build up mystery. So I think the identity of his character, his true motivations, I think is a mystery of the show. And that's my guess, is that the kids are going to be trying to figure out, who is he really?
Mm.
And therefore, can we really trust him?
I
think that trailer raises that question for the audience too, of who is he really? What's his motivation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then that's why people are going to tune in. That's why they're not telling us. They're just going to show us that. Yeah. When are they going to drop that trailer? I mean, they got to build the hype for Ahsoka first.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm. It's great. It's fun. It you know, you hear that, and even in this interview, they talk. I think Chris Ford mentions, you know, building the Amblin style, the Amblin style, which Kathleen Kennedy knows very well. That doesn't do it justice. I mean, you just immediately, dense forest, kids running with flashlights. That's like, that just evokes so much, and it's really fun stuff. The only thing I don't like about the Jude Law thing is, my Lor San Tekka desires. Like, I wanted him to be Lor San Tekka because I only see things in terms of connections and Easter eggs. So maybe not the case anymore. Chris Ford did talk about the era and possible crossovers. There may or may not be some crossovers. He said it's the New Republic era. Though, interesting note, when you actually watch the interview, they both kind of had to figure that out. They were like, what's this called? What's the era? It's like, I think they're calling it the New Republic era now, which was a fun little moment for me. For us, says Chris Ford, it was a great era because as much as the New Republic is trying to bring things back, it's kind of a lawless, wild time. So there's a lot of danger. If we had said it earlier, the kids would have probably met the Empire and just got shut down. This is more of a galaxy to get lost in. I love that take. Again, I love this idea. This is, I think when it was first announced, when this kind of like, what is this? What's going on? And it was, you know, kids on this adventure and it's in the New Republic era. I didn't question. I just had like, okay, well, what could you do in that? And the way they're forming up the New Republic era, which makes a lot of sense of, you know, the Empire fell, but there's still remnants. It's almost a more dangerous time. That's part of the struggle. That's why people can start poking holes at the New Republic government. It's fertile land, I think, for planting some seeds and some wonderful stories here. And I absolutely love this idea that there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of threats. Would you say wonder and terror, Joseph, or wonder and horror? Nurture and threat is what Jude Law kind of said. This is a perfect spot for it, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it's, I love how they've defined this era because there has been more merging that like, look, the New Republic is trying.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's been years of terror. So, you know, and we know that the New Republic is going to get criticized. We know that there's going to be some missteps, but I like that it's just sort of like, this is a big wide galaxy and the Empire had it locked down.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's lots of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that era is exciting for me because I like the kind of storytelling that so far the Mandoverse has got out of it in terms of like thematic, but also practical and not Easter egg, or not even direct connection, like Vane's in it. Great. The guy, the pirate. Great. There's a literal connection, but the connection I like that we've talked about a lot when talking about Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, and I'm sure Ahsoka soon, is this is an era of rebuilding and tentative hope. And we've seen the galaxy from this rebuilding perspective, from the Mandalorians, from the people of Tatooine, from Boba Fett's soul, from, you know, Imperial remnants who hope to rebuild it in a horrible way, to the people of Coruscant. I think we're going to see it from Ahsoka's perspective as a Jedi of, could this be a time for rebuilding? We're going to see it, I think, with spending some time with the New Republic government at all. Even a scene with that we've seen in the Ahsoka trailer with Mon Mothma suggests that we're going to keep seeing from lots of different perspectives. What's the wonder and the terror of this era? What are the possibilities? So to see that from a really, I think that's how Skeleton Crew is going to fit in thematically. Now we're going to see that rebuilding during that hope of rebuilding during a time of chaos perspective from everyday people, from kids who are going to be defined by this time, but don't have any memory of before times. They've only been alive during the imperial reign, and now it's this that they're stepping into.
Yeah, no, that's I think that and that's every generation in our real world. But you know, it's like we have adults, young adults, run around who experienced the horror of 9/11 in a lot different way because it's a history book moment for them and not something that they went through. And what's their place in that in this new world? And that is that's important storytelling as well as can be fun and youth and ET and all those things from our childhood in the '80s. But I think there's some big stuff there. So yeah, Jen, any more on this there? We can talk about crossover ideas too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I really like that they're building out the New Republic. It does feel like it is like the Wild West. People are trying to assert their power still, especially if they once had power. They want to be able to maintain it. Things are still in flux. There's just more dangers, which is another great thing about this era. Like as Chris Ford said, you know, if it had taken place during the Empire, well, that'd be pretty much the dominating factor, the biggest threat. So it's just more room to play. And especially for these children, I think in general, kids, the world can be a scary place. Mm-hmm. You're trying to navigate your world. You're trying to find your identity. You're trying to get back home. So already the stakes are high. And I think that that's what's going to make this really heartwarming in addition to being fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And fun. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Big thing. Fun. We know Vane will be appearing in the series. And Joseph, you mentioned him, the pirate, Gorian Shard's right-hand man for Mando 3, who literally flew off to be in another series there. any wild thoughts for crossovers in the series? Or just, you know, any other known characters, locations you want to see? Where do you go with that, Joseph?
I do honestly remain on Hondo watch.
Yep.
We talked about Hondo for Bad Batch, and I hope for him in season 3. Mm. But you know, we know he survives. Through this era because he's busy with the Falcon. Much later in the timeline, this just kind of seems like this is an era where he's been down on his luck in the Imperial era, as we see in Rebels. You know, what's he trying to get back to? And just his weird relationship with kids, I really do think it's a possibility. There's no reason to speculate this, but two Star Wars locations that it's been too long and I would like to see again are Cloud City in Naboo. So I'd be thrilled with either of those. Mm-hmm. And then for a wild thought is a little bit of New Republic perspective would be great in this. So I think Hera and her mystery son Jason
up.
yes. That'd Jason Syndulla watch begins.
Yeah. Honda watch and Jason Syndulla watch. I do also think that there is the possibility that one of the reasons they're being very cagey about the whole show is that it's got, to me, there is a possibility that it's got some Grogu-level surprise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Remember when we were all excited for Mandalorian and we really all did think it was going to be like, this is kind of like the Boba Fett fantasy a lot of us have had. It's going to be this lone badass making his way through the galaxy. And I remember, you know, people in know at Star Wars Celebration in 2019 telling us, nobody knows what this show really is.
Right.
And there is a reason that it is being produced under the Mandoverse banner more than just the timeline. I think there could still be some twist or surprise about what this show really is and how it relates to the larger story that they're building to.
Yeah, no, I love that idea. Yeah. I don't want to go too far down the conspiracy rabbit hole, but yeah, there is a shroud of secrecy around this from the very beginning. And I get how it was pitched, you know, Watts and Favreau talking on set for Spider-Man and next thing you know, this show exists, but it doesn't mean that there could be something more there. And I like that. As far as crossover ideas, Honda Watch is absolutely perfect. Show for it. Makes a ton of sense. I guess I'll have to give up my Lore Santeca hope. Lore in this era is an interesting time, though.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to give up your hope.
Okay.
I mean,
thank you. You're helping me believe. Here's some wild ones. I let's just have Mon Mothma show up in every series during this era.
Yes, please.
Talking about New Republic. Almost as if they run into her in a hallway, you know, and she gives them some stage Galadriel type advice, you know. She goes, but here's, it's a location that would lead to characters. Endor and Princess Nisa and Brightree Village. Let's have the kids there. And would it seem like the Ewok Adventures movies? Would people be a little snarky about that? Maybe. Who cares? Let's do it. Let's have some fun and have the adventure go there. And imagine Wicket helping them along the way. Talk about this time of nurture versus threat. You got Wicket there. He's all nurture. He'd help the kids.
Yeah, right.
Gosh, could that be the reason why they're being so secretive? My mind would be blown. Because I think that there is a reason. Like you said, Joseph, they feel very... since the beginning, and at first I thought it was because they were trying to protect the kid actors from getting attacked by, fans. I do think that it's related to the story as well. There's some big reveal. I think we're going to be getting a lot of pirates in the show. It feels very Captain Hook versus the Lost Boys kind of thing happening. But another thing I think about is they also want to reach the broader audience, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like they're going to have somebody recognizable or a location, but the Ewoks, what is more broader than that? Yeah. Nothing. Everyone loves, no, they don't, but you know what I mean.
Look, it's gotta be Ewoks. Cause like, I also would have put some Republic credits down or maybe some calamari flan down on Jar Jar, but I'm holding out for, Mando 4. So
yeah,
let's just do it. Let's put them all there. Now be fun. Yeah. A lot there. Another good one, Pelimoto would be an interesting, having her showing up in these series, being who she is and helping but also charging the kid. Maybe it's a lesson on, being swindled at the mechanic. Who knows? Could be so.
I like it.
All right. We're about to wrap up here. Anything else in the interview jump out to you, Jen? And how's your excitement level for Skeleton Crew, which again, I think it's fair to question, hey, when are they really going to start ramping this up? I get the Ahsoka thing. The way news is a 4-second cycle, you want to maybe hold back. But how are you feeling now, Jen, and any final thoughts?
I'm really hopeful because they keep talking about the Amblin tone. It makes me think of obviously E.T., Goonies, a lot of the stories from our childhood about kids, but these movies are not just for kids. They have a spirit of adventure, but they are definitely scary. I was terrified of Goonies when I was a kid. So I'm okay with not knowing as much about this show. It makes me kind of think of Stranger Things. And I remember there was a lot of buzz around Stranger Things when it first came out, but we didn't really know much about it. At least I didn't. I remember the first 5 minutes of that first episode, and I was immediately in because it had that Amblin tone to it. So I'm hoping that the Skeleton Crew can do what Stranger Things did. Is that weird?
I think that's spot on. Cause I think obviously, time moves forward and we grew up with these Amblin things, but Stranger Things is that kind of thing where, people love Stranger Things cause they got hooked on the characters and they're invested in their story in that world building. And there's probably at this point more people who love Stranger Things and then go see E.T. and go, oh, that's where that came from. Right. So I think that's a part of the reason that this show has Go Picture is I think it is going to tap into that Stranger Things vibe, which is, of course, the Amblin vibe.
Right.
Yeah, very much so. I'm excited. I'm getting more excited. And it's going to be an interesting time because without a doubt, there's going to be some folks that this show might not be for, right? Maybe they're aged out, or I don't think they're actually are aged out. They're going to think they're aged out. But in an era where they're just playing with their action figures is thrown against Star Wars is a big insult from people who, say they love Star Wars. This one, you can't do that because that's definitely the point. We'll see the challenge. So I think this, if you already love Nubs, you're on board for this series, whether Nubs is there or not, he won't be, of course, or a Nubs like character. I think you're ready for this show. So there you go. There you go. That's it. That's the news, friends. More on the way. I loved the discussions here. Thanks for listening and supporting. I'll tell you where you can find us right now. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram and YouTube. Thanks to those who hung out with our live stream on last Friday. Alex Damon dropped by quite on plan. We had a lot of fun talking indie and Star Wars. We are available as a podcast on a lot of spots, including iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Also, some of our episodes qualify for YouTube podcasts as well, if you want to find us there. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us directly. Follow me at KedNapsock. If you're on Blue Sky, you want to follow me, I finally got the invite. I'm finally there. Join. It's a quiet party over there. Right now. So head on over there or follow me KedNapsock.com for more. If you're going to San Diego for Comic-Con, I will not be at the con, but I will be doing a comedy show with Mark Ellis and friends July 20th at the American Comedy Company. Jen, where can they find and follow you?
Oh, that'll be fun. You can find me on Instagram, YouTube, and Blue Sky at Jennifer Landa. On Instagram, I did post some of the concept art from the Star Wars Holiday Special, so you can check that out there. And I'm also going to be doing a review of Nubs, the 16-inch Nubs, hopefully within the next week or so.
Nice. Nice. Joseph, where can I find you and your photos of Nubs?
I might have to pick up that 9-inch Nubs now. You can find me in my kitchen punching lemons and done with this film. But I will have, like I was saying, some more news coming out about the previous short film I made with Phil Lamar, some fun stuff happening there. I deeply encourage you to come find us on Blue Sky, find myself, find Ken, find Jennifer. I have high hopes for that platform. It was really nice to see it finally kind of start to explode this weekend. I know there's some problems on Twitter. I don't know if they loosened up the old invite reins, but I think that's what's holding it back. Is it needs more people at the party. So please come find us at Blue Sky as soon as you can.
Yeah, I got in this weekend, thanks to our buddy Ken Plume with an invite. And as I signed up my profile, they shut it down while I was doing that, which was, I still got in. But I was like, I'm the last in the party. I'm like, I brought shrimp cocktail. Anyone? No? Okay. Here we go.
They locked the doors and the cops are coming. Okay.
All right. There you go. There you go, my friends. That is where you can find and follow us. And we'll see you next time right here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.